And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program. So our main theme today is ESPN.com. All of their beat writers who cover their respective teams throughout one player that they think has the most to prove in 2017. We're going to focus on the NFC East. We're specifically going to focus on the Giants. And we want to hear from you. In the division for the Giants, the player that is the most approved in 2017. Could be a rookie, could be an established vet, could be a player coming off of injury. I think there's a lot of different candidates that we could throw out. And then we'll also get into today is the start of OTAs week two, some of the observations we saw in OTAs week one, and what to expect here in week two. So certainly a lot to delve into, Paul. And your thoughts in terms of players that have something to prove here in 2017.
Well, you know, really, this entire question is based upon the parameters that you're going to associate with the question. Because, as you said, you could be talking about guys who are injured. You could be talking about newbies coming onto the roster. Or you could simply be talking about guys who have underachieved to this point. So it gets kind of tricky, and it really opens up the book for our listeners and viewers as to which way you want to go. So when you do call us in or maybe, you know, tweet us, please indicate the parameters under which you're thinking about.
Criteria.
Because
yeah.
I'll be honest with you. For me, for the Giants, it's B.J. Goodson. And this is a guy who played some on special teams last year as a rookie, but they are heavily counting on him to compete, if not win, the starting middle linebacker job on run downs. Well, if he's going to do that, he's got to know the Spags playbook in and out from the get-go. Because there is one thing about Kelvin Shepard, for all the folks who got a chance to watch him last year, very intelligent player. That's the one thing I can tell you for sure. An intelligent player who really understood where to line guys up. Now, you know, was he Harry Carson back there in terms of his performance and production? No, he was not Harry Carson. But he was very, very smart. And if there's one thing we know about Spags' defense is it's not just the middle linebacker, it's also the safety. One of his safeties has to be real smart up here too. Those are the two most important guys in his defense based on the scheme that he runs. Well, so to me, B.J. Goodson has a lot to prove. That's not a knock on him. That's simply because of the requirements that are going to be demanded of him if he's going to be the lead guy in the run-stopping defense.
Now, if you were to go to the injury route, because I think we could actually name you about three or four players that have the most to prove if you went category by category. So, player that has the most opportunity in terms of grabbing a starting job, I think B.J. Goodson is a good candidate. Darian Thompson's another one, but he also falls into the injury category.
Different parameter
correct
for me.
But here's another player that I want to throw out in the injury category. What about JT Thomas? See, I think JT Thomas has a lot to prove, considering his short stint thus far with the Giants, the fact that he got hurt in game one last season and then was out for the remainder of the year. And he's somebody that's battling perhaps even for a starting job or the depth chart position with them bringing in some young guys like a B.J. Goodson. So he's somebody that I think if you're going based on injury, Paul, I think he has a lot to prove coming into this season.
Well, I think he does, and he is at OTAs working on the side coming off of that serious knee injury. But I would say this, okay, to be fair, he's just trying to prove that he's healthy enough to then compete for a job on the roster. Darian Thompson
hasn't even seen time of day on the field.
Right. Yeah. And this is a guy who, for all of his accolades when he walked onto campus as a rookie, this is a guy who got hurt very quickly, was knocked out for the season, and now we are all guilty of assuming he's the starting free safety and he's going to be good immediately. We're all guilty of saying that. And to be honest with you, we're probably jumping the gun a little bit. I mean, he almost assuredly will win the starting job if he's healthy. But how good is he going to be right out of the gate? The good news is he's got a lot of good guys around him, experienced guys, folks who know the system. So he doesn't have to be perfect back there, but he still better have a clue as to what he's doing or it's going to be ugly.
And as far as being a lock, remember, Andrew Adams is still very much in the mix, coming off a productive season. He took advantage of the injury to Thompson. And, I mean, they just brought in Duke Iheanacho, who has experience at both safety positions. He's a name to watch out. And then, you know, some of the guys that are also dealing with lingering injuries in the past, and that Berhaze of the world, too. You have to consider, I think, all of these players. But I think based on what he was projected to do in 2016, Thompson should be the favorite, assuming, as you mentioned, Paul, that he's fully healthy. I'm going to throw out another name before we get to the one that ESPN.com named. What about Owe Adigizua? I think that's another player that perhaps has something to prove, given some of his injuries in the past and not getting on the field much.
He comes from that injury cluster.
Yeah.
And the reason that I won't name him is because I think if you just look at the injury cluster, Darian Thompson should have the most significant role on this team if he does prove what he's supposed to prove.
In terms of a starting job, at least.
Right.
Yeah.
Because Owe, even if he proves that he's healthy and he can be productive, he's only a rotational player.
That's fair.
You know, Thompson should be in there all three downs every single series. So I'm going to put him over Owe.
Gets an edge, because if you're going to say most to prove, usually a starting job should take precedent over somebody that's going to be a rotational player. I don't disagree with you there. So the player that ESPN.com named, they said Eric Flowers, which I'm sure a lot of people probably listening and watching right now are going to agree with. He meets the criteria of a starter. He meets the criteria of still a young player that is developing, and meets the criteria of a player that also certainly can still make strides in the department of consistency. So he probably, Paul, gets all the check marks in all of the criteria and departments that we're talking about here.
Yeah, well, you're looking at guys who have to produce at a higher level on a more consistent basis. You know, raise that level of production. It's pretty hard not to pick Eric Flowers as the guy who kind of stands out. I mean, you could also say Bobby Hart if you'd like. You know, there's no qualm with saying that, because let's face it now, he's in a situation where he could wind up being the starting guy for 16 games over at right tackle. So there's certainly something to prove for him too, but Eric Flowers being the number one pick, being the left tackle, yeah, I think Eric Flowers comes out of that category as the lead candidate.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to open up the phone lines here in a second. We're going to get to your tweets. I think it's also very interesting to look around the division as well, Paul, when you see how these teams have improved, how they have changed their rosters. So for the Dallas Cowboys, ESPN.com says their linebacker, who was drafted last year and missed the entire season because of a nerve issue, Jalen Smith, to them, is the guy that has the most to prove. And he's also going to be in line for a starting job. So I think that's fair. I think, though, you can also point to a few other players, and we were talking about this off the air, on the offensive line, given the fact that Ronald Leary left in free agency and joined the Denver Broncos, that has caused somewhat of a game of musical chairs. So there's at least two offensive linemen worthy of throwing out for Dallas that have a lot to prove, because they're going to be legitimate starters this season.
Well, I go immediately to Lyle Collins, who, you know, they were able to gamble on and get as an undrafted rookie free agent last season. He had some spot duty, got a little banged up. But here's the bottom line. He's going to be their starting right tackle now this year. And, you know, it's...
That's their plan, at least.
Yeah.
To move him to right tackle.
It can't go understated that the Dallas offensive line, which by all accounts, even if you don't think they're the best in football, they're certainly no worse than third. Okay? And I won't even debate that. I mean, obviously, the Titans, the Raiders, the Cowboys. I'm putting the Cowboys number one. But those other two teams are not going to take a far back seat to Dallas.
No, they were up there in terms of rushing yards and pass protection. I think that's fair. That's not a stretch.
So, you now look, they've got to replace two-fifths of that offensive line in terms of their five starters this season. Well, it's that Dallas offensive line that gets leaned on that made them what they were last season. Now, yeah, we already talked about it. They'll probably have six new starters on defense that did not start the playoff game at the end of last season. I get all of that. But how do you camouflage a defense that's probably going to struggle? You control the clock, you pound the ball, and you rely heavily on, quote, the best offensive line in football, which may or may not be now that two new guys have to step into those shoes. So for me, Lyle Collins playing on the edge at one of the tackle spots, becomes the most critical guy who must step up and prove that he can handle it for Dallas.
Now, he's had experience in both of those departments going back to college. He was initially the starting guard, and then he got hurt. That's why Leary reclaimed his job. I'm going to throw out two other offensive linemen that are going to be in the mix, too. Jonathan Cooper, who is a veteran that was drafted by Arizona, got traded to New England. He signed with Dallas last season. He's going to be in the mix at the guard spot, most likely, to replace Collins. And then this is a name that Giants fans should recognize. Emmett Cleary is now with the Dallas Cowboys, and he very well could be competing for tackle spots if they don't choose to move Collins to the right side and keep him at guard or experiment with him at the guard spot. So I think the offensive linemen that are going to be in the mix to be starters, I would put them much further ahead than Jalen Smith, even though Smith has not played it down in the NFL. The Redskins one is the one that I'm a little baffled by. They went with Kirk Cousins as the player that needs to prove the most. And, I mean, I feel like we talk about this every single season, Paul. To me, Cousins has proved more than enough that he's a starting caliber quarterback. He'd be the last guy
I would choose.
He, correct, a productive quarterback. So I don't understand why that would be the first name that would come to mind by the beat writer to name Kirk Cousins over plenty of other question marks that they perhaps have on offense and defense.
I could agree with you more. For me, it's Terrell Pryor. Because, quite frankly, I know what he did for the Browns. I know he had a 1,000-yard season. I know he's a terrific athlete. I know he did a lot of things for a very, very poor football team in Cleveland. The Redskins expect to contend for a playoff spot. It's a different ball game when you're playing for an also-ran as opposed to playing under the pressure under a big contract, with a team that's expected to do something, with a city that is absolutely rabid about football, that they'll turn on you quickly if you don't do so well. And let's face it, Terrell Pryor's resume, very limited as a successful wide receiver. He had that one breakout year last year.
Last year, yeah.
And that's all we know.
Well, and remember, he only signed a one-year deal, so he actually is going to try to prove himself all over again to get a more lucrative contract.
So for me, that's the pick.
No, I think that's a fair one. I don't have much to disagree with that. I'm going to go with another wide receiver because if you compare these two wide receivers, Pryor at least has some substance that he's produced. It's a new scheme. It's a new system. You don't know if you're going to duplicate that. I'm going to go with Josh Doctson, their first-round pick from last year, because he's now having an opportunity, Paul, to replace DeSean Jackson, their vertical threat who has a little bit more size than DeSean Jackson. I liked what I saw out of Doctson come out of college. I thought he was going to make a significant impact last season. Unfortunately, he got struck by the injury bug. So I think he has an awful lot to prove because he's going to be a starter, and he's going to be their vertical threat, and he's going to get plenty of opportunities. So I would lean more towards Doctson than Pryor, but I think they're both very good.
No Jackson, no Garcon.
Both
and left. So they promote Doctson, and they
bring
sign Pryor from the outside. Both of those guys have an awful lot of weight on their shoulders.
And they still have Jamison Crowder.
Yes.
So he'll round out the top three. And then, of course, you have Jordan Reed and you have Vernon Davis. So their tight ends are set, but there's a lot of new faces in terms of the wide receiver. They're weapons, but like anything else, when you have new players in the mix, there's always at least question marks how they're going to produce. Okay, so the last team before we open up the phone lines, and we certainly want to hear from you, who needs to prove himself most, more so than anybody else on the roster for the Giants. And we want to hear your thoughts in the division, too, because Giants are going to see a lot of these players in the upcoming season. So that takes us to the Philadelphia Eagles. And the Eagles, they went with a wide receiver, and they went with Nelson Aguilar, who I actually like. I think this is a very good selection. Philadelphia, the reason why they went out and they got Torrey Smith and they got Alshon Jeffrey is they're not content with their receiving core. They had a lot of young guys, unproven. Even Jordan Matthews has had the case of the drops. He's here or there. So Aguilar has been put on notice, and he has not been able to produce compared to some previous first-round picks. So I think this is a really good selection in terms of who I feel has the most to prove for Philadelphia this year.
I'm going with LeGarrette Blount because they brought him in now and took the chance of signing him to a somewhat lucrative contract. It wasn't dirt cheap. It wasn't the minimum, which a lot of people thought Blount was going to get. And he's coming off his career year with all of those touchdowns, with those 1,000 yards. He has never, ever carried the rock like he did last year for the Patriots. In a way, this was one of those late bloomers who actually stayed healthy and had a breakout year like 6 years into his career. That doesn't happen very often. We've talked about Jonathan Casillas doing that on defense for the Giants. Well, to some way, in some regards, he's the Casillas of offense. The way he has blossomed and turned up his game to becoming a full-time player and becoming a very productive full-time player after kind of a so-so career.
Well,
now,
and part of that, I didn't mean to cut you off, part of that, though, is opportunity, just like Casillas. Well, remember, Casillas was not a guy that was a full-time
injury,
starter.
And
correct.
Injury.
Durability as well, yeah.
Attitude problems in Pittsburgh. Okay.
Even going back to Tampa Bay, too. Remember, that's where Blunt started.
Absolutely. So I think for me, again, you guys know I wanted Blunt for the Giants as a power back in a rotation. I was not looking at LeGarrette Blunt to come in here and carry the ball 275 times as a featured back. That was not what I wanted him for. Clearly, that's not what the Giants were looking at him for either, because when the Eagles offered him the chance to become their featured back, which probably means 280 carries or so, okay, he jumped at that, and he took a decent amount of money with, I think, the doubles with the incentives. So he's betting on himself, and clearly the Eagles are betting on him that he's going to be the kind of guy in this division who is going to take the pressure off Wentz, who is going to help them control the clock, who is going to help them pound out yardage so that Wentz doesn't necessarily have to throw to those underachieving wide receivers. For me, it's Blunt.
201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Players that you think have the most to prove in 2017 for the Giants as well as the rest of the division. All right, let's open up the phone lines. We've got Vic in Florida. He gets us going on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Vic, how are we doing?
Good afternoon, Paul.
Hi.
And Lance. You know, you guys opened up the show, you know, basically talking about the defense and that. I firmly believe that the Giants have one of the best, if not the best, defensive team in the NFL, okay?
Yeah.
But what's wrong with the offensive line? What is it with Reese? Does he have something against offensive line people? Why can't he go out there and get some good offensive line men so that we, our running backs, can run, so that Eli can pass the ball and has a little time with these new receivers that we got? What's going on with the offensive line? That's what gets me, okay?
Well, Vic, I think now, if you look at this free agency period, let's go back and at least look at it through that lens. The amount of money that was given out to starting tackles, or at least starting caliber tackles that were out there, was ballooned this season because they weren't very content with the depth in the draft. Most teams, that was the consensus opinion.
Injured and right. Aging veteran tackles.
So to get back to your point, Vic, it's one thing to say, you know what, we could use more depth on the offensive line. And I'm not going to disagree with you on that sentiment. It's another thing to say, you know what, we have a need there, so let's just throw out money for the sake of throwing out money. That's not smart. That's not wise, especially with the salary cap restrictions. And remember, you know, the Giants – two off seasons ago spent a lot of money on their defense. So it's not like they had all this money again to now say, let's go and spend it on the offensive line. I think you could argue, you know, bringing in some veterans, bringing in some competition like they did will hopefully provide more competition. Remember, they did bring in DJ Fluker. Let's not forget about that. And, you know, you re-signed John Jerry. You still have Bobby Hart. You still have Eric Flowers.
Right,
so
right.
The competition is there. But I think the way they approach it is, we're going to bring in veterans, but we're not going to break the bank open doing it, especially if we don't think it warrants the money or the investment.
Vic, I'm going to go another way. I'll put the economics aside because I agree with Lance wholeheartedly. But here's the bottom line. I remember a personnel guy told me many, 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 many years ago, the devil that you know is better than the devil that you don't know. And the fact remains that any of these veteran tackles who were in free agency, not only were they overpriced, but they're not a tremendous upgrade, if any upgrade at all, over what you have. And,
yes, I agree.
And
I agree.
If you know
okay.
The guys who are in your building, you probably know that there may be some more upside to them than bringing in an outsider. So I think the Giants played this right, given the circumstances.
I do know one thing, Paul. You need four elephants up front in order for you to run the ball.
Five.
And in order for Eli to pass
and make plays,
okay?
Five.
Five. I'm sorry, five.
Five, yeah.
And one more question for you, Paul. Is Lacoste still with the Giants?
Yes, he is. He's out there on the field right now at the OTAs, and You know, hopefully he will be healthy enough and he won't have any lingering issues with his legs that he'll be able to compete for a job during training camp. I certainly hope so, because I still think that the guy's got skills. I think he can, kid. Yeah, but if he can't stay on the field, Rick, it's going to be real hard to keep him.
Well, okay. Well, let's hope for the best. All I know is the Giants going to be in the playoffs, but after that, I don't know, okay? They got the best defensive team in the NFL, period. End of conversation. You guys have a great day, and we'll see you.
All right, Vic. Appreciate the phone call. Speaking of the tight end position, another name that we haven't really talked much about, who actually, you know, has been very much involved in OTAs, is Colin Thompson, who's another young tight end that they brought in. So that's just another name to watch out for. I'm not saying that he has an edge over some of the other guys, but I would agree with you, Paul. We've brought up Matt LaCosse a lot on this program because I feel as if he's that forgotten individual. And that's what happens when a player gets hurt all the time. He was put on IR. He led left initially. He signed with the Jets. He came back to the Giants. And, you know, you tend to forget that this is somebody that if he could stay healthy, based on how he was utilized in college at Illinois, when he was a fullback, he was an H-back, he was a tight end, you know, that's somebody that I think they could benefit from his versatility. But with Matt LaCosse, priority number one is, can he prove to be durable? When he checks that off the list, then I think you could start to talk about, okay, how they can utilize him within the scheme and so forth. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Ken is in New Jersey. Ken, what's happening?
Hey, Paul. Hey, Lance. How you guys doing today?
Doing well, Ken. How's things with you? What do you have for us?
Good. Well, first and foremost, OTAs, what I've seen out of Brandon Marshall has been absolutely it's everything I wanted in a wide receiver this offseason. Even down to his red pants. I don't like the white and red uniforms, but if we added red pants to them, that might look a little better.
Yes, the red tights have been very popular. Even Ben McAdoo was asked about whether or not he has a pair.
Well, the Cardinals had white jerseys and red pants for a while in there too, you know.
Yeah, it looks good. It looks good together. Because I'm not a fan of the red and white jerseys. I just never have been. But with those pants, it looks a little better. But other than that, players with something to prove. Hopefully Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers have something to prove. I really hope they do. According to John Mara and Jerry Reese, that they've been in there working really hard and stuff like that. So hopefully that all pays off this year. I wanted to talk a little bit about Beckham. I really don't try to like call up with anything negative, but is what I'm hearing true? Is he, him and Chris Carter really bad-mouthing the Giants coaching staff? I mean, I don't care that you're not at OTAs, but, I mean, come on.
No, I think what you have to understand, I don't know what you saw or what you read. Maybe it was out of context. I did see some quotes from Chris Carter who was saying that he believes that there's a lot that he can teach a player like Odell Beckham and has, in fact, befriended him over the last several years and thinks that as a player and as a wide receiver specifically, there are many tricks to the trade, and quite frankly, Chris Carter, Hall of Fame receiver, that he can pass on to a student like that. Carter was also saying, again, in general, that I've been OTAs. I've done many times in this league, and there's not tremendous value in it for me as a receiver. There are a lot more details and techniques and things that I think I could probably teach as a tutor that he would not be able to acquire at OTAs. Now, I don't necessarily consider that a diss to the coaching staff. I don't consider that a personal insult. I think, in my opinion, as I read all the comments, I saw it as a generic philosophical opinion put forth by a Hall of Fame receiver who has tremendous confidence in his own ability to pass on details and tricks of the trade to a guy who he thinks can be really great.
And, Ken, what I'll add to that is, just to use a comparison here, it's not unusual for players during the offseason or in their own time to consult with former players who have played that position. For example,
it's done all the time.
A lot of the offensive linemen have worked with LaCharles Bentley.
Yes.
Who is a well-known former NFL offensive lineman. And, I mean, listen, he may not give as much commentary on working with them like Chris Carter
is. In fact, he doesn't talk about it at all.
You never hear from him. You know that, hey, he runs a camp and a workout session with offensive linemen. And some of the Giants offensive linemen have worked with him. They've taken what they can from him. They try to apply it to their game, and they're still listening to the coaching staff as well. So I really don't think that there's anything unusual in working and listening to some other former players.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with him not being there. Obviously, it's voluntary. But maybe I'm just cut from a different cloth. I'm in my 30s. I don't ever badmouth my boss, or else I won't have a job tomorrow. That's just how I am. I don't know if he actually did it. I heard some rumors that he said such and such. I'll be there when it's mandatory or something like that. I didn't hear the whole thing. I love Odell Beckham Jr. I'm a fan of the uniform. I love every New York Giant that's ever been a New York Giant. But you know. I mean, let's try to be a little bit more professional this year, you know? I like the Giants because of how professional they are on and off the field, and hopefully we'll get that out of Beckham this year. That's all I got, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. You got it, Ken. Appreciate the phone call. I didn't see anything in terms of that Chris Carter said. The only thing that I've seen is I know there was some video out in L.A. that he was talking with him and consulting with him. I didn't hear any commentary, so, I mean, I can't really comment on what Ken may have seen. Like you said, it may have been out of context or whatever it may have been.
Well, you know, I just want to say one thing about this whole off-season thing where players will go see former players. Like Jim Zorn tutored Davis Webb.
And we had him on the program not
too
long
ago. We had him on the show, and, of course, Davis Webb wanted to get here immediately because he's a rookie and he knows he needs to soak in everything about the Giants he possibly can. But, you know, that's what a lot of these guys will do in the offseason. They will seek out somebody who has played in the league and pay them to become a professional offseason tutor. It happens.
Now, with Webb, the difference is he wasn't even a member of the NFL at that point.
No,
so
no.
He couldn't consult with anybody
within the league.
It was
more of a pre-career prep.
Correct. Fine-tuning and making the transition from the scheme that he ran in college to what he's going to see with the Giants.
DJ Fluker spent the offseason with Willie Anderson. Four-time Pro Bowl tackle with the Bengals, also played with the Ravens. I think he was in the league 14 years. And Anderson does something like LeCharles Bentley, where he tutors guys during the offseason. And Fluker went to see him. I mean, this happens. That's the way the league works. You know, former players who want to extend their relationship with current players find ways to do that through these tutoring sessions. And I think, unless I'm terribly mistaken, most of these players come back from these things saying that they actually were worthwhile and they got something out of them. Otherwise, they'd shut it all down and nobody would bother to go.
Correct. Yeah, and I think even some of the Giants offensive linemen, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, also worked with Jay Glazer with the kickboxing and UFC type of
Justin
maneuvering.
Justin Pugh.
So there you go. So, and not that Glazer's a former NFL player, but they've looked for other ways to help with the technique that goes into
Kamani
playing the game.
Toomer did martial arts during the offseason.
You taught him a few of those moves.
Hi-ya!
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. If you think Memorial Day exhausted Paul, you are wrong on that point. Hashtag Giants chat. We'll get to some of your tweets as well. Let's head back to the line. Steve is in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How
hey,
y'all
Steve.
Doing today?
Doing all right, Steve. What do you got for us?
Hey, well, first of all, I wanted to go ahead and, you know, and tell you who I think needs to improve the most. Obviously, Flowers needs to show everybody that he's made a big step. I also think Darian Thompson, obviously, he needs to show people he's healthy. He still needs to show me that he can perform, you know, when
that's fair.
It's actually something to play for. And I want to see B.J. Goodson step up. And obviously, Double O, if he's even going to be on the roster this year, I don't even know what's going on. I'm hearing he's not even at camp. I don't know how true that is. But, you know, after his lack of performances the last couple of years and the little remarks that have been coming out of his mouth, he definitely has a lot to prove. What do you guys think about that?
Well, these are all guys we named as candidates for your selection. And, I'll say this. The competition on the defensive line has gotten a whole lot better with the with the draft and then with the subsequent free agent signing of Devin Taylor
from the Lions.
The Giants now have two additional defensive linemen who are going to fight.
Taylor.
Say
that again. I saw him right 138 out of 139 defensive ends. How excited am I supposed to be about him, really?
No. Hold on. Let me tell you something about Devin Taylor, okay? Devin Taylor,
please.
He's 6'7", 270 pounds, okay?
So he's
got the frame. Now, how many terrific defensive linemen have been developed in the Detroit Lions system over the last several years?
I don't know. And Dominic Sue went there.
He was a defensive tackle. I should have changed my question. Defensive ends. Not many.
Listen, All right.
Not
we
Maddie.
Ain't gonna
give this coaching staff.
I gotta see this dude.
He's 20. He's 27 years old, I believe. Right? 27.
I think he's in that ballpark. I
think
so.
He's 27 years old, so he's a young veteran. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Who is 6'7", 270. He's like a raw piece of clay. Give this coaching staff a chance to work with this guy.
He's 27.
And I'm going to tell you something.
Look,
I have no problem making him part of the back end of that defensive end rotation. And if he beats out a guy like Owa, if he beats out a guy like Kerry Wynn, more power to him, because that means he deserves to be here.
Steve, this is
if
what
I'm
I'll say.
Am I not reading
Steve,
right when I found out this dude played 15 or 16 games and only got like 30, 35 tackles? Come on. Really?
Well, because you have to understand, Steve, he was a rotational player. That's what Paul just said. This is not a guy that started every single down. He started as a main guy in 2016. 2015, though, when he had seven sacks, he was a rotational guy. So I think the point is you're talking about
Hold on. Yeah. I want to add this, too. He was voted by the Lions players as the most improved player on the team that year. They loved him 2 years ago when he had those seven sacks. They thought he was going to be a breakout star.
I would just give him the side eye and watch him all year long. How about that?
Make him a show-me player.
Yeah,
how about that?
Steve.
Yeah, he's definitely a show-me player. And listen, guys, I'm not going to take much longer. I'm going to give a quick rant. But first of all, I don't really, you know, I just want to say this. Victor Cruz. Come on, man. Don't you see what happened to Tiki? We got nothing but love for you, man, but you gotta watch what you're saying about my team, son. You got to cut that out.
All right, Steve.
All right,
be well.
Steve. Appreciate the
phone
call.
We'll hear from you again, I'm sure.
I wanted to say this about Devin Taylor. First of all, I don't know what rankings Steve was looking at.
I believe those were the PFF rankings from the 2016 season.
So meaning they ranked every single free agent defensive end in the NFL?
They ranked every defensive end in the NFL.
Well,
and according to, again, this is the problem with analytics. When you take an analytics ranking like that and you don't understand everything about the context of it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like they're pure numbers. They don't take into account if the guy played hurt.
Of course.
They don't take into account what he was asked to do on the field. There's so many things. That's why I will never quote an analytics ranking. You will never hear me say that because I find them to be worthless. Some of their data, their numbers are terrific. That's why NFL teams subscribe to them for their numbers and their data. How many snaps did the guy play? Where did he play those snaps? Those are all legitimate things that those services do.
Yeah.
But once you start getting into ranking and analyzing guys, no, absolutely not. And any NFL organization who even thinks about molding their opinions based on an analytics analysis is absolutely insane to do so.
Well, rankings to me are more for sports banter
than anything else. Phone calls.
Yes,
that's
correct.
What it's about.
No, but I'm talking about when you're looking at the production of a player, even if you're looking at those analytics, rankings are meaningless.
Heck,
they're irrelevant.
I saw some analytics places that had Eli Manning was not even in the top 20 ranked quarterbacks in the NFL last year. Are you kidding me?
That's what
six
said.
Fourth quarter come from behind victories. 11 wins and a playoff spot. And he's not in the top 20, according to analytics rankings. You know what you could do with those rankings, right?
Well, that's...
Seriously.
I think you pretty much laid out my point. But I want to get back to Devin Taylor. The point that I was going to bring up is we're not talking up Devin Taylor to get people excited that he's going to come in, he's going to start, he's going to be one of the top four starting defensive line. That's not the point. I think you were alluding to this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. The point is, at this stage in free agency, Paul, to grab a player that had 11.5 sacks over the last two seasons, who was a part-time starter slash rotational player, and the draft is over, to be able to bring in that type of production.
At 27 years old.
Correct. You have to look and you have to say, big picture perspective, hey, you know what? If that could help bolster the depth chart with that type of production, if he could bring that to the Giants, that's not a bad addition at this stage in the offseason.
Well, let me ask you this.
That's the bigger point as opposed to what he's going to do big picture here with the Giants.
If he is the fourth defensive end, let's assume that Romeo Okwara holds down the number three spot as the rotational pass
the
rusher.
The third defensive end you're talking
about.
DEs.
Let's assume that for just a second.
Yeah.
I mean, that may be asking a little much from him. Maybe he's a four.
Yeah.
But let's assume he's the three for just a second. If Taylor comes in and gets, let's just say, four or five sacks as the number four defensive end in the rotation, is that not okay with you?
I think that anybody would take that. Here's another thing I want to throw out, and this is just pure speculation on my end. Ben McAdoo was asked about this on Thursday when he met with the media, but knowing Spags' track record, Paul, they may move Devin Taylor inside. They may experiment on passing downs.
Absolutely.
So he may be that jack-of-all-trades type of defensive lineman. And even to take it a step further, because I think you brought up an interesting point about if you're evaluating the third, fourth, fifth defensive end, you have to understand what the expectations are numbers-wise. You're not expecting that guy to come in and get you 12 sacks. I think you're content with if they could get you 4 or 5. Let's look at last season, Paul, because I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. But
sure.
If you start looking at last season, what the depth chart produced in terms of sack totals, I think that's a fair comparison.
Okay.
All right, so let's look here. Olivier Vernon, 8.5. JPP, 7. Those were your two starters. They accounted for 15.5 sacks. Now we start looking at the defensive ends. I'm not looking at DTs. I'm looking
Okwara
at defensive ends.
And Wynn.
Okay. So first we'll look at Okwara.
And
Okwara,
of course, Owa.
Okwara had 1 sack last season.
Mm-hmm.
Then you look at, let's see who else here.
You have to look at Owa, you have to look at Kerry Wynn.
Yeah, I'm just trying to navigate my laundry list here.
Oh, you're going to have to go pretty far down the stats.
Well, no, they don't necessarily have them in order, and you can't navigate it by order, so that's why I'm just perusing through the names here that you were throwing out here. In terms of Kerry Wynn last season, where is he? Why am I not finding Kerry Wynn?
I think he and Owa may have combined for 1, perhaps.
I think you may be right about that. I just, for some reason, I'm having a hard time. Owa had no sacks last season. And then Kerry Wynn had 0.5 sack. So you had one.
I was off by a half.
You had 1.5 sacks between Wynn, Double O, and Okwara. That was 3, 4, and 5 in terms of defensive ends.
Even though Romeo Okwara didn't start playing
Correct.
Heavily
he didn't play.
The final month. But nonetheless, it's a slot. We're not talking about the player now. We're talking about those slots.
And production. We're talking about production.
3, 4, 5. What'd they get?
So the Giants just brought in a guy that had 11.5 sacks as a rotational guy. Once
again, in the last 2 years.
Over the last 2 years.
So I mean, let's say he gets 5.
Yeah, let's say he gets 4. You'll take 4.
That's
how you have to look at it.
Absolutely.
We're not trying to say that this guy's going to come in and surpass JPP. And
he's not OC, okay?
That's not the purpose. It's all about what you're asking him to do, what type of role he's going to have on the team. I think that's fair, and I don't think that's a stretch. All right, Christian is in Virginia. Christian, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hey, I think for the Giants, Eric Flowers is a sore thumb as far as somebody to prove. I mean, we have to get return on that investment in the first rounder. I'll throw another name out there just to play the game, I guess, is I think Shane Vereen has a lot to prove. I think he's been a big part of the offense when he's played. He's really offered the offense a versatile player, but he's got to stay healthy. And for, especially for the price tag, I thought he might have been a guy that would get cut, honestly, because of how much he costs. But
well, he
I really
did
think
readjust
that,
his
I think
numbers.
That we've been hurt when Vereen gets hurt, too. I think that really hurts our offense.
Well, I mean,
what
that's a huge part of the offense. I agree with you there. I mean, the dynamics that he brings to the table. But here's the thing. I'm going to still stick with, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I mean, listen, everybody's entitled to their opinion. And Vereen, when healthy, I think takes the Giants offense to new dimensions. But if I'm going to look at the veteran players that are returning from injury, and the veteran guys are Vereen, JPP, as well as JT Thomas. Those are the three main guys that miss extended time. I would still go heavily towards JT Thomas having a lot more to prove than JPP as well as Shane Vereen.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you guys said at the beginning of the show, it's all about parameters, how you want to look at it.
Yeah.
I think JT Thomas has the most to prove because he's done the least. I just think Vereen, as far as his performance, he has nothing to prove as far as can he play. We know
he
can play.
Right, because we've seen that before, and that's what I'm getting at.
Can he stay healthy?
Yeah, sure.
And I'll throw an interesting one out there. You guys let me know if you agree with this. And once again, I'll frame it with the parameters. Dak Prescott, I mean, the most important position in football, most important position on your team. I know he had a great year, but, you know, like they always say, you know, there's pressure now. There's no – you're not the backup. Everybody's got film on you.
It's a really good point.
You got two new offensive linemen. Like,
yeah.
I think he has a lot to prove, honestly.
I like you throwing his name out there. In fact, after we did our analysis, I started thinking in my head, you know, you could probably put Prescott in that conversation too, although – with Ezekiel Elliott, and if the offensive line is right, and they can still run the ball, you know, for 130 yards a game or 140 yards a game, Prescott still won't have a whole lot to put on his shoulders. You know,
right? But if
they can make it a lot easier.
You still have to
You're right,
you
and
still
that's
have to
why
make those handful of throws.
It's a good name to throw into the hat, but I don't think his chore or his task is as significant as those two offensive linemen. Because if those guys got it done up front,
because they lean on that running game so much,
they really do.
I get what you're saying with that.
And if those two offensive linemen don't get it done, then Dak is in a whole lot of trouble anyway.
Yeah, because Prescott is Prescott's more dependent on how the offensive linemen produce more so than anything else. And here's another thing that I'll add to what you're throwing out there. I think if you're going to bring Prescott up, now Carson Wentz wasn't nearly as consistent, but Wentz belongs in the conversation too.
It does.
You have a guy
who's a young quarterback playing.
You just don't know what you're going to get out of them in year two. So you have to include him as well.
I won't take up too much of your time, but I kind of want to – I'm kind of repeating what you guys said, but I'll piggyback on the Devin Taylor comments. And the caller is not completely off base, 138 out of 139, and I'm not the biggest analytics guy. But, I mean, you know, it depends on what we are bringing him in for. We did not pay him money to come in and play every single down. You know, JPP and OV also, when you go to the carry win sack numbers, remember that those two defensive ends, they played
more
snaps
a lot of
than anybody.
No doubt.
They never came off the field.
Point. Yeah,
so
that's fair.
Opportunities aren't there. But I think that Devin Taylor, he's proven that 2 years in Detroit, you know, he's better as that situational player. I hope that when our coaching staff gets their hands on him that maybe they can develop him into – I kind of see his frame, too, and his game a little bit like what Mathias Chiwanuka used to be able to do for us.
Absolutely agree.
I'll take the rest off the air. You guys are doing a great job. Thank you for the show. And I'll listen to it off there.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. 6'7" over nearly 300 pounds. I mean,
he's 270, 275. Yeah. He does definitely have a frame of Mathias Chiwanuka. But again, when we talk about that, talk about Kiwi as a defensive end. Let's not talk about when they converted him into linebacker. I agree with you. He did. When I first saw him at the facility, he did remind me. I'm like, you know what? He's got the kind of frame to kind of build the kind of body. I'm thinking I'm a Kiwanuka type of guy. Now, again, in the role that they will assign to him with Patrick Graham as the defensive line coach, I think he's going to be a positive addition for this team. I really do. I thought it was a very wise and an efficient signing.
Well, and I would say the same thing about Duke Iheanacho. Whenever you can add two established veterans, guys that, I mean, we're not talking about they played 1 or 2 years in the league. Now, Iheanacho's had some injury woes, so he also needs to prove that he's durable. But my point is that at this stage
of
the
offseason. And he's no lock to make the team.
No, he's not. I mean, listen, I don't think anybody's a lock. I wouldn't say that Taylor's a lock either. He's going to have some
competition. I think he's got a better chance than Iheanacho does.
That's fair. I mean, I don't think that that's a stretch, but I don't think anybody's a lock. I mean, I even remember I said this. I said when the Giants signed Leon Hall, I didn't consider him a lock either.
Right.
Because even when a veteran comes in, I mean, I'm going back a little bit, but when they brought in Israel Adonijé, remember they brought him in? He had a very good preseason, if you recall, Paul.
Off
he outplayed everybody.
You easily could have put him on the 53, but they decided the upside for Kerry Wynn was the deciding factor.
So I go back to Israel Adonijé just as an example of you can bring in an established vet, he could produce, they still may want to go younger because they're thinking maybe long term.
Yeah.
So that's why I never consider any of these established vets a lock. But getting back to my point, at this stage in the offseason, free agency is long gone, the draft is done. To be able to bring in and take some chances on guys that have shown they can produce when healthy, I think that's a win-win, even if they make the roster or they don't.
At worst, the competition during training camp will make the guys you keep better, even if you don't keep those guys.
Because they're pushing some of the younger guys.
Exactly.
Because they know, hey, I got an established vet playing behind me. I got to step up my game or else he's going to take my spot.
I mean, no matter how it shakes out, the Giants should be better for it.
Maurice is in Montclair. Maurice, what's happening?
How you
Hello?
Guys doing?
Hi.
Hello, how you guys doing, gentlemen? All right.
Doing very well.
Hey, I'm gonna throw out a number of guys, a couple guys, and I'm going to give you at least my reason and why I think they have something to prove. Then when I'm finished, you know, I'll take it off the air. I'll start with Will Tye. I think Will Tye has a lot to prove because he's been around. You know, the Giants have seen promising things from Will Tye. Not that he ever was like a breakaway downfield game-changing type of guy, but he did have some ability as he flashed at certain points. And now that they brung a young rookie with amazing, you know, ability to stretch the field and things, I would think that this would be a big offseason for him as far as training camp and thus forth for him. So I think he would have a lot to prove. I would also say that Jay Bromley being at the same in the same breath that you know, a big void was left by Hankins when he left. And so now the Giants draft a rookie, and I think it should be more of a personal thing. Like, you know what, I'm not going to let a rookie come in here and win this job. I've been around here. So I think for him personally, you know, I'm not that high on Jay Bromley. I did see good things from him. But I think personally, as far as him and his shoes, he should have feel like he has something to prove, you know, in this on this team and on that defense. And I had someone else in mind, but I'm going to go – this one right here might surprise you guys. And I'm not – and when I say this, I'm not speaking from my point of view, but the norm and what the outside critics may think. I'm going to go Eli Manning. The fact that the Giants had loaded up this offense with tons of weapons, and no one ever wants to hear excuses. Guys, we all know as Giants fans what went into Eli not having his best season. I'm not going to say it was a bad season, but not having his best season, you know, the offensive line and things of that nature, not a good running game. That all factors into his production.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say if you would talk to him, Eli would say himself, I believe that, yeah, I have a lot to prove, you know, because he's getting older. So everybody wants to criticize Eli, but I never see Eli on that bubble as I hear some of these analytics and critics say. So, you know, I think, you know, in that respect, Eli would have something to prove because of, you know, just the tons of weapons. And people never want to hear excuses about, oh, no, O-line, oh, y'all had this, y'all had Brandon Marshall, y'all didn't do anything. And so I will go Eli Manning, and I'll take it off the air, gentlemen.
All right, Maurice. I like all three of the guys.
That's a very intelligent phone call.
Absolutely.
Like it very much. Please do call the show again. I will make one comment, and that is very simple. If you are a relatively young player at a position where there is not a cemented starter in front of you, and then the team drafts a first or second round pick at your position, you better. And I mean, you better light a bunch of coals under your butt.
And
that goes without saying.
Well, and then the same thing is for Bromley, if that's who you were alluding to. I don't know if you were Will Tye, too.
I mean,
Will Tye was ahead of the depth chart, and they brought in Ingram. And then Bromley's looking at it. Hankins goes bye-bye. So Bromley's like, I get to move up with Robert Thomas. And then all of a sudden, Dalvin Tomlinson comes into
both of those guys fit that description.
Correct. I agree with you. And I think, you know, the Eli one is good because it's not an obvious one, and it's one that probably maybe a lot of people will scratch their heads. But I think Maurice the caller, he backed it up with some really good rationale.
Excellent call.
And the fact that – and here's the best rationale. Forget, you know, whether you think Eli's disrespected and overlooked according to the rankings. Whenever an established quarterback is starting to get up there in age and you figure that this is the time period where they start to decline, they have to prove it every year.
It's true.
Right? I mean, Tom Brady's got to prove it every year that he could still continue to play. Drew Brees is trying to quiet the skeptics as well. So, I mean, Eli falls in that category, I think, by default, and that's why I really like the rationale behind it.
Excellent phone call.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you here. Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. The theme of the show, who has the most to prove in 2017 on the Giants roster? And even if you want to throw out guys within the division, Paul and I started off the program, in case you're just joining us. We looked at ESPN.com's article that focused on this, and they threw out the Eagles, the Redskins, the Cowboys, and we've heard from Dak Prescott one caller throughout. So feel free to chime in on that entity as well. Leo is in New Milford. Leo, what's happening?
All right, having a great day. I thought that was a great call. He touched on so many excellent points. One of the things that I wanted to bring up was the Giants' strength and conditioning has improved so much over last year and hopefully into this year again, because we led the league in injuries, what was it, two years in a row? And that has so much to do with the players to watch. And the guys that I would look to, to be like a Jarrell Adams, who's shown flashes of great potential.
Jarrell Adams, you know, it's interesting you brought him up because I feel as if he's just looked a little bit faster during OTAs for some reason. And maybe it's just that he looks differently, but every time I've watched him run routes so far, he's got a little extra pep in his step. And we'll see when they put the pads on whether or not that translates. But I would agree with you. I think, you know, Adams is another guy. We were just talking about Will Tye, Paul. You know, just because Evan Engram was a first-round pick doesn't mean that the guys behind don't have something to say, hey, you know what? You could still line up two tight ends and you can run me out as a runner, and I could still go out and catch the football. And Adams flashed last season. Here's the one thing I will throw out about Adams, and I bring this stat up a lot. He had 21 targets, Paul. caught 16 of those 21 targets. That shouldn't wow anybody. I'm not bringing it up to say, oh, my God. But if Eli throws you the ball 21 times, you haul in 16, I'd say that's a pretty good percentage.
He showed really good hands.
Yeah.
For a guy who didn't catch a whole lot of passes in college, he showed a very strong ability to hold on to the football. And, you know, I root for the kid because he's a good guy. And he was taken so low in the draft that, you know, most people didn't even give him a second thought. Look, he's going to be in the mix at tight end. Now, look, Ingram's supposed to start. Obviously, that's the idea. You draft a guy number one, he's supposed to be the starter. And you go out and you sign Red Ellison. Red Ellison's going to play a lot, too. But there are going to be times where that third tight end is going to get in the game, if for no other reason, to give one of those other two guys a break. You know, that number three tight end's going to play some. And you know what? He may catch an important pass. So Jarrell Adams is not a bad guy to talk about.
No. And Red Ellison's a good guy to talk about because you have to see how he does fit in, how many snaps he'll be getting, if he'll be on the field at all times, and then we'll bring Ingram in more often, you know, to stretch the field or see how we're going to approach that. And then you look at, are we going to have somebody at the fullback position? Are you going to take a Matt Lacoste and throw him back to what he had done?
Well, or the guy you just named, Leo. I didn't mean to cut you off. Red Ellison. I mean, don't remove him from the equation.
Exactly.
He may be your answer. Yeah, he may very well be your answer at fullback. Remember, he was the guy that blocked for Adrian Peterson in Minnesota. So the Giants could very well envision him being more of a fullback than even a tight end, given the fact that they drafted Evan Ingram. You know, they may have said to themselves, hey, we feel that Ellison will be more effective coming out of the backfield as a blocker, and then we'll have Ingram being our true tight end that runs routes. I mean, those are things we're going to have a better idea about when we get into training camp, when we get into the preseason. So I don't know necessarily if Red Ellison is a guy that needs to prove anything, because Red Ellison, his production is dependent on opportunity. Where do they place him within the offense? That's what he's going to have to showcase when he's given those opportunities.
Right. And then you also, one of the thoughts, and with Paul, what you said in reference to bringing and signing people like Taylor, that can help in ways you're not even thinking, or we're not thinking of as fans, in the future as they get into pads and they really start hitting and doing things. Maybe that length can help guys like Eric Flowers and Bobby Taylor on dealing with different types of defensive ends.
Bobby Hart, Taylor.
But Taylor, I'm talking about as a defensive end, lining up against our two offensive tackles.
You're talking about competition for the offensive
line.
Exactly.
That's essentially
what you're pointing
to. Competition for the offensive line from the defense. You know, they say when OV is in there, he really, you know, kind of makes them look bad, and JPP can make them look bad. But there's also different types and styles, and that can help. And that's when you have the 90-man roster. What you're looking at is how you're helping someone in practice get ready. And I think back years ago, my son won a state championship when he was a sophomore. He didn't even want to get the ring. And I said, get the ring because you helped and contributed by being a bit of a tackling dummy, but by helping during practice. So
it's
those
a great,
kinds of things we forget about.
I think that's a great point.
And quite frankly, I'm interested in seeing what Avery Moss can do. You know, let's not forget him out of that defensive line equation.
Late
because,
round pick this year.
You know, they did take this guy who at one time was at Nebraska and in their minds has a great deal of upside.
And, Leo, I think you bring up a great point, and, you know, I don't want to get off topic, but I think you could use that with the basketball analogy. You know, there's a lot of guys in the NBA who will tell you by going up against, throughout the San Antonio Spurs, Kawhi Leonard is considered one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. So just think about all the offensive guys that go up against Kawhi Leonard in practice to prepare themselves for what they're going to see during the course of regular season games. It's the same thing. If you're going up against Olivier Vernon in practice every day, then you could prepare for what you're going to see when you go up against Fletcher Cox and the Philadelphia Eagles, and you go up against some of the other premier defensive
lines. I will say this. That line of thought carried a lot more weight when they really did a lot of hitting.
Well,
You know, this watered down Kool-Aid CBA does tend to limit a lot of those advantages. And again, one of the many reasons why I can't stand the CBA, and you've just hit on one of them.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've been a fan since the 60s, and I remember flying back from Florida one time, and I sat next to the team doctor from the Giants. It was the greatest flight I ever had. Yeah, because we just started talking about every different Giant over the years. He went back to Robustelli.
and he had some unbelievable stories. It was a great time. But I'm really excited.
Well, all I'm going to say, Leo, is if you ever have a flight back and you sit next to Paul Dottino, you may be changing your story about that doctor. That's all I'm going to say. So, you know, you gotta be careful about those eye-opening experiences. Until you've sat next to him on a flight, I don't know.
I'll tell you one thing. You certainly won't sleep.
I can guarantee you that,
you
too.
You won't have the seatbelt on, probably.
Leo, appreciate the phone call. You got it. Thanks so much.
Oh,
some great points by the callers today. Really appreciate the dialogue.
Well, and this is also why I believe the practice squad guys are valuable.
Yeah.
Because there are certain looks and there are certain things that they can do for you on the practice squad to help better prepare your guys for Sunday. Look, Frankie Ferrara. Do you remember Frankie?
I remember that.
Staten Island guy.
Yeah.
Real paisan, and he was a stuntman, him and his father on The Sopranos.
Indeed.
Frankie was a defensive end who, I think over the course of like 4 years, had many cups of coffee with the Giants as he kept getting shuttled between the active roster and the practice squad. And Frankie did not know low or medium. He knew high-tech speed on every single practice. He was an absolute monster. And it was funny because the Giants players would always like, oh, there goes Frankie again, because he was like the Tasmanian devil. He was wound up so tight for every practice. He wanted to hit the quarterbacks even when they were wearing red jerseys in practice. He was an absolute beast. And the Giants players would always say, you know, Frankie, make sure that you're sharp, because if you're not, he's going to really make mincemeat out of you in practice. And there's value in that. Anyway.
Only one switch on the gauge for him.
there wasn't
even
a switch.
Went on and off. There wasn't levels.
No. It was plug the batteries in, close the door, and he's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no on-off switch. If the batteries are in, he's gone.
I want to get to a few tweets before we wrap up the program. Hashtag Giants Chat for those of you who didn't have an opportunity to call in. John at JMF 8013, Eric Flowers is the most approved. He has to show the Giants why they drafted him. Freddie at Freddie J underscore 23, being a third-round pick and also going into his third season, this is definitely a make-or-break year for Jay Bromley. So that's now the second person that has thrown Bromley out. A.J. Marshall at A.J. Marshall 3, Jarrell Adams has the most approved going into his second season, so he gets more playing time. Got to improve his route running. Okay, so see, a lot of people are weighing in on the same group of players that we're throwing out here. Here's an interesting point with respect to what we were talking about with Devin Taylor, as well as what a few of you brought up on the phone line. At Gruen Ben, I think the defensive end depth chart has been upgraded and goes under the radar. At worst, they've significantly improved competition at that position. Instead of reacquiring Kennard or Whitlock to rush on third down, they've invested in actual defensive ends to push win and double O for roster spots.
No argument.
And that's pretty much what we were hitting at home with respect to how you have to look at the Taylor signing and how you have to envision that. James at little underscore TNT 32. What do you think about Mikel Thompson switching his position to slot cornerback? Well, James, he doesn't have to switch his position. He played that position. They already were lining him up before he went down with an injury. And go back to his days at Texas. He lined up in the slot in addition to safety. So it's not really a matter of him changing. It's just a matter of maybe if they want to give him more reps there.
Yeah, I think there was a writer who might have published something about that the other day. It wasn't news. It was something we already knew last year. They had already experimented with him in the slot, and there was certainly a chance he might have played some of that last year had he been healthy enough and made the team in stock. But as it turned out, he went to IR again, and so we never got to see it. But that's not new news.
Yeah. I think I would agree with you. I think the media has started to play that up because, for example, I remember at the press conference on Thursday, Paul, somebody asked Ben McAdoo, I see Mikel Thompson lining up in the slot. Is that where he's going to be? He was lining up in the slot before he went down with an injury. So, you know, I mean, that's why I said sometimes these narratives are like
the
coming
news
out of nowhere.
The news cycle is slow, folks. Yeah. They're just looking for something to write about.
Correct, yeah. No, I'm not blaming James for bringing it up. I mean, you're reading it. You're staying on top of it. But Thompson, I didn't think that was a new storyline.
No.
Because, I mean, even when Tom Coughlin was here, they were lining him up at the slot position.
You just got to pay attention.
Yeah, and he just also, he has to stay healthy. That's the storyline with Thompson. Can he stay healthy? You know, that's the big thing.
The story is that he was out there, not where he was playing.
Yeah.
The story is that he was out there and running around.
Let me throw out one or two more tweets here. Steve at Dasmore3LL1. I hope Jarrell Adams gets time. Was a steal in the draft. Chances, he's asking, we see a formation. with Engram, Adams, Ellison, with Engram and Adams, excuse me, at tight end, and then Ellison at fullback? He's asking.
Well, a lot depends on if they keep Smith, that undrafted Shane rookie Smith. Free agent who, you know,
out of San Jose State,
is going to be fighting tooth and nail to try to make that roster. I think if he does, well, then I don't think there's any reason for Ellison to play fullback if Smith sticks. That's my take. I think Smith is actually fighting the fourth potential tight end on the roster, because if he sticks, they probably just go with three. If he doesn't stick, maybe they go with four tight ends, because then Ellison could slide back into the backfield and play some fullback. That's how I see it.
Well, and that's why we were talking about Matt Lacoste, too. He's very well in the mix. Exactly. Where they're going to line him up. I mean, there's a lot of different guys. And that's why when we get to training camp, that's going to be interesting. Where do players line up within team drills? Not that that's necessarily going to give it away, but maybe it just gives us a better idea of how they may utilize the personnel.
The preseason games are going to be huge, folks. Let's face it. You know, remember, there's only one cut now. It goes from 90 to 53 after that fourth preseason game. So every one of those preseason snaps is going to be invaluable for guys like this who are fighting for back end of the depth chart spots.
Well, that is going to wrap up the program today. Once again, appreciate the phone calls, appreciate the tweets, keep it coming. Part of what makes this show great is your interaction, so we certainly appreciate you tuning in. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday this week, starting at noon Eastern. We will continue to preview all the latest out of OTA's week number two, and obviously try to have a question each and every program to get you more involved in the show. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday right here on Giants.com.